This is Infection, the Survival Podcast, recorded live on Tuesday, March 5th, 2019, episode 216. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Infection, the Survival Podcast. Infection is your source for the latest information on survival video games, MPR games, and all that other fun stuff. We bring you the latest news, reviews, updates, and more each and every week. My name is Nick Craig. You can follow me on Twitter at Nicholas M. Craig. And, of course, visit our website. It is infectionpodcast.com. He is sick again. His voice is all broken up. But he's here, Brian.
But I am here.
Aldridge. Mr. Aldridge, how are you sick again?
I'm alive, and you know, we will survive.
Boise is supposed to be the greatest place on earth, yet you've now been sick for, what, 6 weeks?
What's strange is I rarely leave my house. I don't know how I get sick when I barely leave my house.
Maybe you're getting those e-worms that those commercials in the 80s talked about on TV, the e-worms on your computer, Brian, giving you a virus.
Passed over the wires of the
Maybe
phone
it's
lines.
5G was making you. Are they doing 5G tests in your area?
It's the 5G.
Yeah, the 5G cell tower they put up in your backyard is making you sick.
Yeah, that could be it.
And 6G, I think that's the next thing. We're 5G and 6G.
Yeah, it's like whenever I leave my house, so like the once or twice a week, three times. I think I leave my house like three times a week. So when I leave my house three times a week, like somehow I get in contact with somebody who's sick.
Have you not turned into like a total like loon bat? I mean, it seems like if you only left your house 3 days a week, you'd get cabin fever and eventually just lose your mind. I mean, we have been doing a podcast for 215 straight weeks. So, I mean.
So we are kind of in that category already. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, we believe that we're important because we're podcasters. So maybe we are in that. But we've been like that for years now. So I don't know if that's necessarily a symptom.
Yeah, well, we'll get by. All right. So if you want to find me at Boise Computer on Twitter, of course, my blog, biteoftech.com. And just go to our website, infectionpodcast.com. As Nick said, we got on there links to all of our past show notes. So maybe we'll talk about something and show a video. You happen to be listening and you can't see the video and you want to go check it out. Just go to our website. We'll have links to those. Or you can watch the, if you want to watch the whole recorded video, we have a link to that on there as well. So you can watch it on our site. Also, we have on there a link to our Discord. So if you want to join us and submit news throughout the week, maybe you want to just harass Nick, things like that, you're more than welcome to join our Discord. It's a free app. We have our Steam group if you want to get a live notification right before the show starts. And that just pops up on a little notification from Steam. If you happen to be at your computer at the time when we're starting our live show, you're more than welcome to jump in and join us. So. And then, of course, all of our audio-only podcast forms.
I also would like to promote Brian's TechNet profile on Microsoft TechNet. He is Boise_IT on Microsoft TechNet.
No, that's not me. That's someone else. That's an imposter.
An imposter. So if Microsoft TechNet, Boise_IT, help me out with my Outlook, Office 365 Outlook problem.
You can email him, which we'll see what he says.
Yeah, maybe he
looks like he has very little activity.
One post and that post helped me exactly with solving my problem. So I want to thank him. thank him as well for making the show possible. All right. Well, I was out of town in our nation's capital for the past couple days. So I've been a little, I was disconnected for Game of the Week. I know you guys played The Division 2. How did that go?
So it went pretty well. Of course, I went into the game and immediately had the audio bug. And so I guess what I can do is give a little tip here of how to fix that bug. Because I was like, I'm not putting up with this for our Game of the Week. I'm not going to listen to that. I mean, I sent a recording to our Discord group.
Sorry about that.
I sent a recording a couple weeks ago to our Discord just to kind of show them what I was hearing. And I found a post on the internet. Right before because I started up, saw that I was doing it. I was like, okay, obviously it's been a couple weeks. Maybe some people have found a fix. If you go into your audio card settings and you can set the frequency, the hertz that the sample rate that it produces the audio at, you can just change that and it starts working.
So you're probably running at 44.1 and you probably change it to 48 kilohertz.
Something like that. Rate. Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
And I bet you if you were to switch it back, it would probably start working. Audio Windows gets weird with audio sample rates. Sometimes you've got to change from 44.1 to 48 and then back to 44.1, and sometimes it'll fix your problem. But that is an odd issue, but it's good to know that you weren't the only one, right?
Yeah, so as it was happening to other people, I changed that, and then instantly it changed the audio to how it was supposed to be sounding. So if you're having that issue with the Division 2, try that. That should fix it, because that was the only solution I found for that problem. Hmm. And so that's probably was the direct cause. Other than that, we ran around, made a group, shot up a bunch of people. There were still a few lag issues as far as that initial scene, because you had to recreate your characters. When that scene in the very beginning, when you're walking up to the White House and there's AI that are shooting at the White House, and hopefully this doesn't get us flagged in some audio search filter on the internet. There's AI that they're supposed to be there in front of you. And because of the lag and the delay, I run into the fight, start shooting, and then they start to portal in, kind of like Star Trek. Like, it is weird. They don't just show up. It's like they flicker in.
Huh.
And then they're there, and it's like, now I'm surrounded by AI that I was supposed to slowly work my way towards killing through.
God, now you're,
it's kind of frustrating.
Of, yeah, you're in the thick of
but
it.
But that was the only time that happened. So they still got some bugs. I have another bug, because now that I have Laura was playing it next to me, the cutscenes for me are all black screen except for a little box. And I figured they were trying to hide the cutscenes, you know, so they would be surprised for the real thing. I just thought it was on purpose. They're only showing you a little piece to show that there was a cutscene.
You're like using
one of those. No, hers shows the cutscene.
So it's like using one of those cereal box lenses to look at the moon or whatever, the sun. You got a little cut out of the screen.
Yeah, it's just like I see a little square on the to the right side of part of the cutscene. And I was like, okay, well, I guess this is their little trick so that they don't get released on the internet. No, that's Laura's was showing them just fine. So there's something weird. There's definitely some issues they need to fix before the actual release.
Judd is making a point in chat saying he wishes he could skip the cut scenes, because you went over this with We Happy Few. You went through those cutscenes mm-hmm. like 2 dozen times. You know, people have already played the beta.
Okay, we'll do another tip. You can skip the cutscenes. Hold down, hold down F.
Oh.
Whatever, there's like an interact key. I think it's F. If you hold that down, that will skip through things.
Hmm. Wow. Look at all these.
Now that he knows.
I mean, this is incredible. A couple tips. I mean, you're giving everybody the free tips this week, Brian. This is incredible.
Yeah, we could just skip it at the end now, right?
Yeah, now we just press F through the entire show. It'll just warp us all the way, warp us all the way to the end.
Chris, Judd is hitting F right now. Yeah. You got to hold it down.
Yeah.
And then it skips everything.
There's 600 people playing H1Z1. See you next week. We're out of here. All right. Well, unfortunately, Brian, due to another work event, we're relocating our facilities. I will not be around this Friday either. This is not an attempt. See, it's funny because I'm always complaining that people aren't showing up for Game of the Week. In the past 2 weeks, I've been unable to show up for Game of the Week. And this week will be the same. Now, fortunately, we've got a playtest of a game you can get for free. And that's Zero Survival. Zero, I think is how it's pronounced. Zero Survival. Mm-hmm. And we've got a sign-up code in our show notes. So if you go there and look at this week's episode 216 of Infection, you can sign up for their open alpha. It's got a referral link in it, and it helps us out. So Josh, the guy over there behind Zara, can attribute some of that stuff to us. So if you want to play that, we're going to be doing that Friday night, 8 p.m. Eastern in Discord. It's our Infectio Game of the Week.
Yep. Sounds good. All right. Is there anything else you need to cover before we... Now,
yes, actually, I think... No, there's no subscription since last week's program. I do have a store I want to open with, though. You've got something better to open with.
No, I just wanted to make sure there was a video I put at the very beginning. I wasn't sure if you felt like that would be stomping on your segment.
No, we can get, well, I think we should do that around this time of my segment. I think that'll be a good good little combination.
Okay. There. I put that in there. I wasn't sure when you wanted to do it. So I figured I'd leave that total freedom because that is kind of in your wheelhouse.
I appreciate you not stopping on my segment, but I do want to open with Brian. News that broke this week about you were actually playing this game in real life a couple weeks ago. That was Atlas. Were sailing the seven seas and
watching whales jump out of the water.
Yes, that's what you were doing. Krakens attacking your boats. They are doing an official network wipe with their update, their big March update.
Yes.
I've read through this post. There's a lot in here. I want to cover it all, I want to cover the post. I'm not sure how I want to tackle it though. Do you want to discuss our thoughts on the update first or the wipe first, or do you want to go through the notes first?
Let's go through the notes first.
Okay.
Because then we can kind of then talk about, based on the notes, what's the reasoning?
Yeah, and they give some of that reasoning as well. So they're calling this, they're kind of doing a March Madness thing. They're calling it March Milestone. And they've done a really nice infographic here. Conan did a fantastic infographic when they have done their big updates, and Atlas is not far behind. This is a really well done thing here. So for their milestones for March, the three primary milestones that they've got listed on here are World Redesign, which we'll get into, Claim Revamp, which we've talked a little bit about in the past, and a new war system, which we'll cover as well. Now, their secondary milestone are some of their quest things. For example, Ship of the Damned, which is a quest, Submarine, Quality of Life Improvements, giant Crab, Curses, Cosmetics, Bugs, Vitamins, a couple of other things that they're working on as well. So this is what their milestones are for the month of March. Which is update 20. This is their update number 22, their captain's log 22, which is going to, as we said, include the official network wipe. So the first big thing on here is the way that they're redoing their claim and war systems. So now players can build anywhere without owning a settlement. Even on an island that has been claimed. So you can build now in a claimed island. And if an island is claimed, it will now be known as a settlement. Only one claim flag can be placed per island, which if you played any of Atlas at launch, claim flags everywhere, all over the place. Yeah. Griefing, essentially. One claim flag can be placed per island, and the owner, which either is a player or a company, is the owner of that settlement. So you will have single owned islands by the reading of this, an island will be known as a settlement. And I believe you'll only be able to have one owner per island. If I'm reading this correctly, I could be incorrect on that, but that's kind of what it's indicating. And there will also be a hard limit on the total number of claim flags. Again, something that wasn't previously in there. You were allowed to place, I believe, unlimited claim flags.
I mean, you saw some of the images of the claim flags, and they were just one tribe, I guess we call them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
they were called tribes.
ARK. One tribe would sit there and just have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of claim flags spread around, if not thousands for some of them. And it was just polluting the whole system. Also, I would think that it would have some sort of a performance impact. I mean, if you're going through an area and there's hundreds of claim flags, that's a lot of information you're still having to send to the server. So I think that they're trying to improve upon that to where the claims are a little more legitimate, not just let's just put them everywhere because it's a pain to undo that.
So with claim flags, sea claim flags have been eliminated. You were allowed to drop flags essentially in the water, and if you were sailing through the water, you would see randomly that you're in an enemy territory. I never really understood
and
that.
You see random messages from people pretty much.
Yeah, like go F yourself or whatever, and it's just like, well, I don't know why you'd even want to be able to put a claim in the middle of the thing. You can't build, and you can't, like, I mean, you guess you could anchor your ship in the same spot, but that doesn't, you can't build the structures on the water. You can't build barges. Yep. You can build boats. So no longer use sea claim flags. Claim flags can no longer be used to steal structure ownership on land. So you could, if you disputed a claim and won ownership, you'd get the structure. That's no longer the case. Claim flags can no longer be merged into other companies. So these big mass, which is an indication.
They can't just sit there and swallow everybody up.
But see, and this is kind of a change of course, because they were originally promoting large groups, which presumably were eating up smaller groups. That was originally what I thought that they were.
That's what they were doing.
They were promoting the massive tribes on these servers. And that now it seems like they're not promoting this, because that's a huge part of it, was merging companies. You just swallow up all the claim flags.
I think if they would have looked at the history of ARK, they would have known that exactly what was going to happen. They could easily see that, okay, sure, you have a big group of people that are excited to play the first couple of weeks, and they play. And it's a huge, huge company. But you know what? People drop off. And those then previously very large companies are then dwindled down to 5-10 people,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you have 5-10 people owning this huge amount of area that used to support hundreds of people. Okay, now it's a pain to undo that. Like, those people have way more area and way more power, I guess you could say, than what 10 people should have. It makes more sense to have small groups so that the whole economy and the whole number of people on the server kind of ebbs and flows, and people will maybe stop playing in one area, and then other people can come in and kind of take that island over. It, when they're covering a huge area, as long as that tribe stays, few people in that tribe stay active, it still keeps this whole area claimed. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. So they fixed that up. As I said, there would be a hard limit on the total number of claim flags per company. They're saying, for example, 20 numbers can be adjusted. They're going to have to set those numbers, though. These are the public servers.
Can't have a 20 person. So a company is limited.
No, they're saying
now to 250. So that'd be 250 people with 10 claims, or is that 10 claims per person?
No, this is 20 per company, 20 claim flags per company is what this is saying, I think.
So those must be. How do you keep, if you have 250 people, it becomes a rule that you pretty much by default don't let people set claim flags, and only probably the clan leader can, and then he can assign it to individuals.
Probably, yes.
I just don't understand
what they say numbers can be adjusted. I guess they mean over time they can adjust the numbers, because they'll set those rules.
Or on a private server, nobody, you can adjust the numbers. But nobody plays talking about dedicated. These are the limits on the dedicated. These are defaults.
I think it doesn't say that, though. So maybe 20 is the
starting. They'll probably tweak it. They're probably saying this
I agree.
May change.
So now, same thing, a claim flag cannot be placed without a tax bank. The tax bank is how you essentially pay for the claim flag and how the whole economy and that works. Claiming an island, which will now be called a settlement, again, claiming an island will take a fixed amount of time plus an additional amount per claim flag owned. So it says, for example, 1 hour to claim and plus 1 hour per owned claim flag, meaning if you've got 18 claim flags or whatever,
we have the longer takes,
and an island, 19 hours. It sounds like 19 hours is going to be the time it's going to take to claim a new settlement. Meaning,
so 19 hours of people being able to come in and interrupt it.
Correct. And I think this is how I'm reading it. Which again is, this is another kind of shot across the bow of
these large companies.
I'm reading the notes. I don't know. We don't know exactly how this is all going to work yet, but this is how the text is reading is coming across to me. And same thing with declaiming, it will take a set amount of time. For example, 2 hours, numbers can be adjusted, meaning I think they're willing to move those things as they go. Now, upkeep, they're also working on. So claim flags now have an upkeep cost, which is paid from the tax bank, meaning you have to put money in that tax bank, or after a period of time, you will lose your claim.
So you can't just claim a ton of things and have them sit there forever.
Exactly.
Like they were before.
Upkeep will be an assortment of resources. So it'll be money, the thatch, rocks, whatever stuff needs to be in there. And the upkeep cost will be on the scale of the size of the island, the total, this is big now, the total number of claim flags a company has. Remember, multiple claim flags, multiple islands. Claim flags so, a company
so,
has.
So they're making an incentive to stay small.
It looks to be that way. And how many different companies slash players are building on that island? So it, again, it looks like you'll have a single claim per island that owns the island. And then players building in that. Though players that build in that do have to pay a tax. That's how that works. But if I'm reading back...
But it costs you more too. So you have more that you have to bring in.
Yeah, because I do see that it says only one claim... Now, it says one claim flag can be placed per island. Maybe that means only each individual group can only have one per island. Maybe I'm reading that incorrectly.
So they're trying to keep you from taking over a whole island to yourself.
Maybe
so you
that's
can have a piece of the island.
You can have parts of the island, but
so you can have a piece on up to 20 islands. Is what they're saying. You can have a small section, so you can't have people saying I own this island, which changes the whole mentality. Because before you're going in and you're like, this is my island. We're going to run off anybody who comes near it. Right. That was the mentality before. But if you're only allowed to have one little piece of the island, one little section, pretty much put a base on.
Yeah.
You could try to get a good harbor in there, but you, there's no way you can claim that whole thing is yours. You can't mentally, you can't say that's mine.
Yeah.
You are sharing that with possibly 30 other people.
Yes. Okay. So that makes a lot more sense. Players can only place items into a tax bank that go towards upkeep. It was before you were able to use it as kind of like a falsetto storage bin. Claim flags will have a grace period after successful claim to allow resources to gather in a tax bank before upkeep is charged. And the claim flag will visualize if the upkeep will not be met, so players are able to contribute directly to the tax bank. The tax bank will now stack resources like a ship resource box. So that's the big update on claim flags, which, as we've been talking about, seems to now be re-incentivizing small groups. Let's call it 5 to 10 active player groups, 15 active player groups into the game. So that's claim flags. Let's talk about
settlements. Settlements, I think this is going to be a big difference that we were kind of questioning, I think, early on, like, how do you have a base and then expect it to be there later? So settlement owners now must set a window of vulnerability. Mm. So they have to set 9 hours of time that their base will be raidable.
So isn't that interesting, outside of, Ryan? It's like we've almost talked about something like that.
Yes. Outside of that window, your stuff is protected. They take no damage from other players. But they're setting a window that people can go in. I mean, we've talked about this not only with this with Atlas, we've talked about it with Ark, and we've talked about it with other games.
But structures that are built on islands that are not settled, Brian, can be raided at any time. So if you have to have a settlement on the island, and your settlement has to and you have to have a settlement, I think, is how I'm reading that.
Yeah, this is for the settlement. So an island which has been claimed is now known as a settlement. You can build anywhere without owning a settlement, so an island which has been claimed. So once you claim an island, that is your settlement. So that you set the time on that. You can build, that's not claiming. Because it's just an object out in the world.
Yes, which you're allowed to still do.
But when you put the flag down, that is then opening up this to where you set the window of time.
Yes.
So so you got your settlements. Now, what would prevent you? Here's my thinking immediately. I'd say, okay, what prevents them from always setting the time to now? Now is not when you can raid me. You know, always setting it to a different time. Mm-hmm. So they have a timer that players... the timer that goes off before they can receive that invulnerability status. So they can't sit there and change it every day to always kind of match.
Yeah. Log in every 8 hours and change it to the next 9 hours. You'd never have an overlap with.
Yeah. So they have a timer to prevent that. So people can't game the system.
Good call.
Anchored boats or docked boats will follow the same rules. if they're in the radius of a settlement. So if everybody's logged off, so this is encouraging people to get on and say, this is our 9 hours of when something could happen. Get on, sail the boats around, protect the boats, do whatever you need to do. Please, people, play during that 9 hours. You can do whatever you want outside of that 9 hours, because imagine those people, like, we went in and sank their boats and things like that. If this were in place, probably wouldn't have been able to do that. We would happen to have had to have been there during their 9 hours. You know what? Probably if it's, let's say, a Chinese group, they're going to put their 9 hours to the time that they're active.
Yeah, exactly. And on the East Coast, you'd make your 9 hours sometime. Probably.
So this also hurts the Chinese groups, because we can set our 9 hours to US time activity, and they can't come in during their daytime and sink all our ships.
Yep.
So I think it's definitely a better way. And as Falcon's saying, this is a pretty good feature that should be in ARC as well, because this makes sense. They do have, they have something similar. That they don't shields, force you to set a time.
Shield system, right?
They have it to where when nobody's logged in, it sets the shield and things like that.
But that's something you have to unlock. No, that's like a tech. Isn't that a tech tier thing that you have to do?
Yeah, you have to build. You have to make it.
So not every, a tribe with a thatch.
So everybody
base
doesn't have it. Exactly. And you have to put one at the base that you want to use. I think there's a limit.
It's a very advanced system.
Yeah, Falcon says that offline raid protection is too much. Yeah, like it's not nice, realistic. This is a nice kind of in between that encourages people to log in, because that's the thing. How do you get people to log in at the same time and play together? This type of a system is how you do that. People will get on about the same amounts of time, and they'll start seeing each other, and you'll build that community, just like we had in H1Z1. That's what made H1Z1 so fun, is everybody got on and played together. I think most of these games have gotten away from that. People will log in whenever they want and do their own thing. They just happen to be in the same group, and they kind of use some of the same pool of resources. They don't play together anymore, and I think that that's the downside. I think this will make people enjoy the game more because they're willing to play together. So non-settlement owners who have cannons on ships and are anchored shall not be allowed to fire cannons outside of wartime.
That means you can't attack. That's saying that, because technically you can't attack inside of a settlement. This is saying if you're outside of a settlement, you still can't shoot into the settlement. I think that's what that's saying.
Okay, so non-settlement owners who have cannons on ships and are anchored shall not be allowed to fire cannons outside of wartime. So if you're in that area and you anchor your ship there, you still can't fire.
Exactly.
Settlement owners can freely damage other characters and structures on their island. So that's not limiting that. Settlement owners can set taxes on their islands, which will automatically be deposited in the tax bank. Structures that are built on a settlement, which does not belong to the settlement owner, will have a decay timer. So people can still build there, but it will decay.
Yep.
Players run shops, which are placed on islands, can also be taxed by settlement owners. So if people put a shop in your area, you can put a tax on all the things that they sell out of that shop. So I think that that's pretty much all the settlement stuff.
Yes. So we've got that. Now they've also made some company updates as well. NPC crews on the offensive/defensive seated structures will no longer count towards the tame limit while they're seated. Company limits have been reduced to 250 members. I don't remember what it was previously. Was it 500? I don't know what it previously was, but it's now 250. Again, another shot at big groups. Limited to 250 players now. Company size, company limits, not 250 people online, 250 people in your company.
All together.
Group ranks have now been increased to 10. Alliance changes will now be logged in the captain's log. I guess they weren't previously. You can now sort the company's log to display entries from top to bottom. A new group setting, which can grant owner permissions for company members, which can only be set by the owner and unset by the owner. Members with the owner permission will not be able to remove the actual company owner. So you can essentially give somebody a super
owner status, but they can never remove you.
Yeah, you're giving them like an admin, but you're the super admin. So there's, you still have the, they can't remove you exactly. An alliance.
Now, Chris, Falcon, he brings up a point. He says 250 still seems really generous. Why don't they set the limit of a company to the number of people that can be on one square at a time?
What's that limit?
Like 125-ish. Oh. I mean, they're kind of pushing 120 to 150-ish.
You know, I mean,
that's all. That's the people that can be together at once, possibly.
Correct. You know, I don't think you'll have a couple of mega groups. The 250 numbered, I wish I knew what it was previously. Maybe we can find that. But if you said you could have 125 players logged in one square, Brian, if you have a 250 person company, you probably don't have 120 people logged in at the same time. And again, with a large group, the goal is probably to have multiple settlements across multiple plots. And if you genuinely want to have people living in different parts of the group, different parts of the world, the 250 person, company is not the end of the world. Now, I will say the fact that they don't allow you to merge claim flags anymore means you probably aren't going to have groups the size of 250. The only reason I think in the past we're seeing
that takes that meta game away that people were gaming. I mean,
we could have companies
trying
saying,
to get us to join them constantly. I mean, their whole game was just seeing how big they could get and how many people they could merge in.
And you'd also have companies that say, we're going to wipe all of your stuff out unless you merge with us. And that was kind of the goal. We either destroy all of your stuff or you merge and we get your claims because you have a good claim. So that's no longer really going to be the case, which I think is really cool. You can now sort of, let's see, I read that. An alliance now only contains a maximum of 4 companies. That's also big as well, meaning little groups. This is probably more towards little groups. Little groups cannot go around and be alliancing with everybody around the map. You can now be you can have 4 groups that you're allianced with now, 4 other companies that you're with now. And a company can only be in 2 different alliances at a time. So think about that. So you can have 4 alliances, but the people that are in your alliance can only be allianced with one other group. There is limits on this, meaning you cannot go around the entire map making friends with everybody and having no PvP. This is big. It doesn't sound like a lot, but that's huge. I'll read it one more time. An alliance can now only contain of a maximum of 4 companies, but a company can only be in 2 different alliances at a time. Think.
Keep them from just doing chained alliances because that's what they're doing before.
If you have 5 people on an island, 5 different companies, they cannot all be allianced together and own that island. That is no longer a possibility.
Yeah.
I think
that's going to encourage PvP.
I think I'm doing my math correctly. 5 groups, a company can only be in 2 different alliances at a time. That is correct. A group of 5 people can no longer be allianced together if they're on the same island, meaning you're not going to still have these quote-unquote super tribes controlling these islands because not everybody's going to be alliance. Now, you can have informal alliances, but official alliances are now super limited. This is a shot, I think, at smaller groups than it is bigger groups. Because that's who this hurts 15, 10-player groups, 5-player groups.
Yeah, but I mean, look at all those ones that were just making alliances with everybody.
Yeah.
And then they would turn and backstab certain people. Then I mean, we saw those politics going on the islands that we were on.
Yeah,
it was silly.
So let's see here. Other things that we've missed here. So declaring war, players can now purchase a war token.
I want to make one clarification. So you can. You can only have 4 companies in an alliance total. Period.
Correct.
And you can only be a part of 2. So you could have a possible of an alliance with 6 companies. Possibly. Because you can have 2 different alliances. That is with 3 other companies each.
Correct.
Right? So the max that you could have is 6 companies. They wouldn't be allianced all together.
Correct. Exactly.
But you'd have a 3 and a 3 alliance. So you could possibly be alliance with six total people.
A maximum of 4.
Because an alliance can only contain 4 companies. You're one of the 4.
Correct.
Your company can be alliance with 2 different alliances. So you can be one of the 4 here and then you could be one of the four here.
I got you.
So,
I understand.
So now you are six. There's eight. I mean, there's eight, but you're two of them.
Yes. So I got you. Okay. That makes sense. So you can be, you can be alliance with six other people at a time. I got you. That makes sense. Yep. Yeah, a little confusing, but nevertheless, a big, very big change. So declaring war, players can now purchase a war token, which will be of significant cost, which can be used to declare war on an island. This is not for individual groups. This is to declare war on a full island. When war is declared on an island, this is very cool. Players must schedule a time in the future from 3 days to 1 week out. So you will pick, if somebody has enough money and says, I want this freaking island that you've got, Brian, I'm going to get a whole bunch of resources to buy this coin, and I'm going to say, all right, mofo, let's throw down. You pick a date and time, meaning not in the middle of the night when you're not playing because you have a job and kids. You pick with your group, hey, we are going to do this at a specific time of day, presumably, wink, wink, a Friday night, a Saturday morning, sometime when you've got ample time to play the game. So that's super, super cool. Only one war can be scheduled at once, meaning you can only be in a war at a time. Can't be fighting. You're not going to be.
Only one war can be on one person at a time.
Yeah.
You can declare multiple wars on different islands. So there can only be one war per island at a time.
Well, that makes sense.
Because if you want to be in war at three different islands, you can.
Only separately. One war can be scheduled at once
for that island.
But you so only
two
can
different
have
groups can't come in.
Oh, I see. I got you. Okay, that makes sense. Exactly. War. Of course, you wouldn't be able to do two wars. There's a cooldown.
One
after,
person.
Yeah, exactly. Because once you lose the war, presumably the island's going to switch ownership or something. There's a cooldown after a war has ended before another war could be declared on that island. Declaring war is per island, so it is impossible to declare war against multiple islands at the same time.
So it is possible to.
Excuse me. I'm dyslexic. It is possible. I'm trying to fit my own narrative into this. It is possible to declare war against multiple islands at the same time.
Just say what you want to believe.
It becomes fact anyway. I'm a podcaster. The UI will indicate whether an island is experiencing wartime soon or is currently in wartime. So if you're sailing by an island, you'll be able to tell what the hell's going on. Wars will last a fixed period of time. This is cool. It's the one thing they don't give an example on. A war will be a fixed period of time. So I don't know, 3 hour window, something like that. And when a war has been, when an island has been deemed warlike, building rules no longer apply after the war is ended. The normal rules are enacted again. So once a war is going on, I guess you can storm a beach and build little pop-up structures.
You need to do.
Yeah, you could build a set of structures all across the island with beds to respawn and supplies and kind of, I mean, you're talking like real guerrilla warfare tactics, I guess, with this. That's super freaking cool, Brian. That is.
So Falcon brings up a good point. What if that group sets the unraidable time to the time of the war?
Well, once it's...
Is that possible?
No, because once wartime is enacted, building rules and all that shit no longer apply.
But what if they set a war for the time that they're going to be in bed, most likely? You know what I'm saying?
Like, but it won't matter.
They can make it a really an annoying war if they do it in the middle of the night.
But you have to agree on a schedule, though. Actually, no, I don't think you agree. I think you sketch. So, Brian, I'm going to declare war on you. You set the date and time. I assume that's how it works. I declare the war.
Yeah, because it says when a war is declared on an island, players must select its scheduled time in the future.
It says players.
I just don't get. They don't say who. Is it the one being declared war on?
No.
Or is the one declaring the war sets the schedule?
It would be the one that you're declaring war on. That would be the only fair way to do it. So, Brian, I want to declare war on you. You get to set the time. Now, I need to either shit or get off the pot, essentially.
Yeah.
So, I need to be willing to fight I need to be willing to fight war the war on your terms. I would assume that's how it is. Because if not, I doubt you'll... I don't know. We'll have to see. This is a very cool mechanic, though. This is literally some of the stuff that we've been talking about. So...
Yep.
There's two different things here. We've got structure protection, which is an all the time thing, but in war times, all the rules are out of the thrown right out. I mean, it's total warfare.
Yep.
And you only have to worry about one group, presumably during that time doing stuff. Let's see. What have we missed here?
So
we got that.
Only the owners of a settlement will be able to build offensive structures like mortars, cannons, swivels on their island outside of wartime. Other companies can build defensive structures anytime. Other companies can build offensive structures only during the wartime. So outside the wartime, these structures are non-functional, inactive, and unusable. So I guess they'll stay there. I don't know. They're saying you can only build them during wartime. And then once the war is done, like they just won't work anymore.
Well, they'll work. Yeah, exactly. They'll probably just disappear.
Well, it says they're just inactive and unusable, but I'm wondering if there's, at what point in time they actually go away.
Yeah. Well, after the decay time, there'll be a decay time because it'll be in somebody else's settlement. So after whatever that timer is, they'll just disappear. Settlement build rules. Only the owner of a settlement will be able to build offensive structures, aka mortars, cannons, and swivels? Swivels?
Swivel cannons.
Okay. On their island outside of wartime. Again, you can have multiple owners now, even though one is the real owner. You can give multiple people ownership. Other companies can build defensive structures at any time. So on the defense, you can kind of do whatever the hell you want. Other companies can build offensive structures only during wartime. As you read, outside of wartime, these structures are non-functioning. So we've got that. Notification.
Here's something I thought you would like.
This is exactly what you were big about
in ARK.
And we actually, I did a little bit of work on the one in ARK and found it to be totally useless. Notification systems. Players can sign up for email notifications related to company log activity. I wish they'd go a little bit more into what that means, because anybody that's played around with IFTTT and Outlook filters knows that you would get emails in if it matches a certain text, aka attack, raid, damage, whatever it may be, shoot IFTTT a push request, send me a text message to my phone, my base is being attacked. That's kind of how that flow would work. That's how it works with, you know, with server notifications and other push notifications. That's how that works. Company logs that have any physical in-world locations now shall include the grid and GPS. So it'll tell you where it is. This is also huge, Brian. Discord webhook for in-game company notifications, meaning you can set up a Discord private channel in a Discord server like we would, set up a private Discord channel in our server, tell people to turn push notifications on, and only
then
invite,
it'll pop right up on your phone.
On your phone, and only invite people. This is kind of the catch-22, though. You only want to invite people that you want to get the notification. You don't want your whole group to, you may not want, because anybody in your Discord would see, oh, they're getting raided. Now let's jump in and, you know, counter raid them or whatever's going on. So you can kind of play around with this. I don't know why. We've been doing the show for 5 years. I don't know why this is the first time that we've seen this. I really hope that the ARK people, that's who this is, the ARK people, that listen to what people like us and other, and this isn't just us that have talked about this. H1Z1's Reddit talked about this. ARK's Reddit talked about
this. We talked about this a lot on H1Z1.
This is huge.
Having notifications.
I mean, this is
notifications.
Brian, they've done everything that we've talked about. Raid timing based on a certain schedule. The war thing we've never talked about. That is so freaking cool. Notifications based on company logs. I want to see the integration of that. That could be a little iffy. And the timeliness of the emails. We know how emails can kind of sometimes sit and wait and not go out instantly. So we got that. That's the notification system.
But with Discord, like, I could create a bot if I wanted to kind of extend that. I could have a bot that watches that channel for certain words. And then, I mean, if you were really savvy with this, then start doing things based on that notification in Discord.
Yeah, like sending a group
opens up a lot of.
Yeah, I mean, you could private message a couple of people on Discord and say, hey, get on the server. Have your bot message them and say, get on the server. For the lawless servers, they will continue to operate like normal. No islands on these servers can be claimed. Reduced structure placement rules. Don't know exactly what those are. And damage decay added over time on all structures. And then finally here, this is out of the general things that they've changed here. And PvE network, of course, no claim flags. Damage decay over time added to all structures, and a new auto repair structure, which players will need to upkeep to prevent structures from being destroyed by decay. So you keep a new auto.
So you're pretty much putting resources into a box. I mean,
it's like a tax system essentially, but on the PvE servers,
just to make sure you're still playing.
So just that, Brian. Okay. Let's pull back our graphic up. This was just the claim revamp in the new war system.
And the war system. So that was the two things on the right.
There's still one other primary milestone for this update, and that's world redesign. I lost my place here in my notes. Let's talk about the world redesign. So I'm just going to read directly over this here. This milestone, this is what they call the March milestone, will introduce some world changes to Atlas itself. The overall objective of these changes is to provide players with more land to use for their bases, as well as a general update to current biomes. You talked about there when you mentioned this when you were playing around with the private servers, that you saw islands that existed that you could spawn into your private server that you were playing around with that were not
exist on the actual official servers.
Didn't exist. And you said a lot of them had pre-built structures, and there were some things on there that I guess you and I kind of determined just weren't ready in time or they just maybe didn't want to congest the network with that kind of nonsense on launch.
Yeah. They just didn't have stuff for it yet.
So
they didn't have it all completed.
Over 200 islands added to the network, approximately one additional island per grid. So they're adding one new island per grid. Doesn't say the size, but one new island. It could be a large island, could be a small island. Players can now set any server as their home server. Following the wipe, which we already talked about, and the potential for free ports to be overloaded, we will be temporarily enabling setting any Atlas server as your home server. This is to combat the bullshit we dealt with on day one with being unable to get in with your freaking group and having to join a close server and having people run over to you and try to add you to their group and then dying and reloading and setting your home. So they're going to,
but also, I mean, we saw the dissipation of people from those free ports of just from that point out, every single island was just covered with people. It wasn't evenly spread. I mean, if you look at the map of how people were spreading across the island, it was purely based on those free ports. So this should create a much more natural spread across the island of players.
I agree. And I like that they learned from the agony of people the first time. There's so many people all trying to hit a couple of different spawn points. I mean, Brian, I must have spent 4 hours probably combined, 3 or 4 hours combined, just trying to get with a freaking group. And then when your player would get corrupted, you fall under the map, and then you have to remake your character and you can't spawn. And it's like, Jesus. Why would this just work? So they've kind of simplified that, which is really good. And then over a period of time, they'll turn that back off. So they'll be doing a temporarily changing some of that stuff.
Yep.
Okay. A new vehicle, Brian, that they've added. The submarine. Yes. Now, the goal with this is to explore the depths of the ocean in a small scouting submarine. No weapons on board, meaning you're not going to be able to go around and shoot things.
It's not replacing your ship.
Yep. But it does have a claw arm to help you harvest the ocean floor. Now, this thing looks super freaking cool. And they are, I don't know how, I'll say this. When we originally were talking about Atlas, we assumed that there was going to be a lot of things to do in the water, as like the majority of the map is literally just the ocean. But when Atlas came out, there wasn't. There was nothing to do in the water. I mean, you got on your boat and you sailed. There was nothing else to do.
You could see that there was stuff down there, but
it was useless.
It wasn't something that people went and did.
Now, you could put scuba diving gear on and go and harvest what? Oil was what people were harvesting from underwater?
Yeah, and if your ship sank, I think you could go down to it and try to get stuff out of it.
But there was nothing to really do underwater. I'm not going to say live underwater, but you couldn't do stuff underwater. This submarine is changing that. They want you to explore, and presumably they're going to be adding things here. So the submarine is also lights up its surroundings and require fuel to run. So you have to put some gas in it. The fuel cost will be based on movement. So the more it moves, the more it uses. Additionally, there will be a higher cost for movement that is lateral, forward and backwards, compared to longitudinal. I can't even pronounce that word.
Longitudinal,
so once, moving up and down. So it'll cost more to go like this.
So if it's really deep, you're not going to waste all of your fuel sinking just getting down. It's once you start actually exploring and doing things.
The submarine will not outclass the ships, as you'll need to pay a lot of fuel costs to be able to travel far. The intent is to use them as underwater deep diving scenarios. It'll be unlocked, and it can be driven by defeating the Krakens. Oh, look at that. A quest. Something you have to do in-game. Yes. Though players will be able to be passengers in other users' submarines without having to complete the Kraken quest. This answers one of our previous questions.
You can actually run around in it. So it's you can sit down. You can run it kind of like you do with the ship. You know, you interact with the wheel, and then you're locked in place, but you can walk around inside of that, and there's like a hatch, and you can exit and swim around it, things like that.
This is another thing that we talked about, Brian. Why do the quests in game? What is the benefit of doing the quests? Why go out of the way? This is their answer to it. You want to be able to go and search and do things underwater? You got to go fight the Kraken. You got to complete the quest.
It's kind of like what they did with the high level armor in Ark, because you couldn't get to those things without defeating bosses. Like, they put a gate there that you had to actually do some things to be able to get that tech level gear. This is kind of that equivalent type of a system, to where you have to defeat the Kraken and do special things, and then you get this really kind of cool reward out of it, which I think is the good way to do it. I mean, look at WoW. That's what the whole thing was built on, was doing something that was hard, and then look, you had something really cool to show for it in the end.
Yeah.
And people love that kind of risk reward type of a system. If you make it to where everything is too consistent, people don't appreciate anything and they don't enjoy it.
So with the submarine added, they've added a new environment. This is pretty cool. This is the Deep Ocean Trench. It kind of looks like a little city underground.
Yeah.
I've noticed that they use pretty low quality pictures of this that are very blurry. I think this is kind of in this.
It's much better in game.
Oh, I'm sure it is, but it seems like maybe
I watched the video and it was much clearer.
Yeah,
than their picture.
I'm wondering if they're trying to keep the. I wonder if it's just part of the marketing of it to try to keep it kind of looking like this, in game, because this is not a good picture. So that's the one of the underwater trenches. It can be found on the Golden Age ruin servers, and it contains 8 new power stones, which can be used to unlock, fight a more difficult version of the Kraken. It'll be an area where players can find new resources, new creatures, such as the crab, which they've added in here. This is a giant crab. Can you read the description of this while I have the image up here?
New creature, giant crab. It can heavy loads. I assume they see it can lift heavy loads.
Oh, okay.
Along with players, tames, and wild creatures. It just says it can heavy load, so it could, I assume it can carry.
So you can tame it, and it's kind of probably like a trike, maybe you'd say, maybe equivalent to a trike, or what else carried a lot of stuff in armor?
So here's the thing. Here's its ability. Mm-hmm. So it is a tameable creature. It can have the ability to carry and throw other players or creatures.
That's cool.
It also can jump very far, which I don't remember crabs really jumping that far, but hey, you got to go somewhere.
How much time have you spent investing in crabs?
Yeah. They don't have enough crabs, I guess.
You live in Boise. What the hell you know about crabs? You don't have any crabs near you.
Here's a little story.
Oh, Jesus.
So I actually had crabs for my fish tank.
Oh, okay.
Little crabs.
Uh-huh.
But the problem is they will climb up the tubing and will walk around your house, and you find them dead underneath of your couch or whatever. Like, they don't stay in the fish tank.
What a bunch of dummies.
Yeah. So unless you have one that's totally blocked off, like you've somehow sealed it in, don't get crabs. And it can also jump very far. So these abilities may change over time as we progress further into Atlas development. My guess what they mean by this is once they start getting more and more creatures in, because remember what they did with Ark, they worked it to where each creature had a role, an ability, something that it did that was specific. And so right now, they don't really have that many creatures to do that many things. So I think what they want to do is turn around and, all right, this right now will be a one that carries a heavy load. It can throw players and it has the ability to jump. Well, they'll probably will break that down once they have a creature that jumps, once they have a creature that carries heavy loads, once they have a creature that's able to throw things. You know, this will then take on one role and kind of be dumbed down to that, is my guess. Because right now it's kind of doing the role of three characters or three creatures.
This is definitely the most dynamic creature. Excuse me. This will be the most dynamic creature once it's in the game here. They've added a new environment here, Brian. It's called the Eastern Tundra. It has its own visual design, and it no longer uses the Western tribal style. Where's the picture of it? Here it is. Oh, that's new. Here it is.
I am in the West.
there's the picture east. Of that. You can see the design of that. And with that, they've also added a new structure, one that I can't believe wasn't in the game from the start. And that's the guillotine, which of course, you know, as the,
this they teased is, it.
They did. This is the thing that cuts your head off when you're acting inappropriately. They put your head in the guillotine and the big blade comes down, chops your head off. And then it looks like there's a head on a stake here. So imagine you'll line your base or something with a bunch of heads, maybe some Game of Thrones stuff going on there. So they've got that out in there. You can now take their heads.
Okay, so here's an interesting thing with the guillotine.
Okay.
If once you behead a player, the game remembers their facial appearance and their hairstyle, and then you can use that as a decoration on wall hooks and things like that.
Put it on post. You'll line the wall of your entrance with your enemy's heads. I'd assume that's what you'll do. They've added a.
But then there's the curses that are tied to the execution of that player.
Yeah. What are the curses going to do?
So once you've executed a player, you now receive a percentage of their experience points. Now this has a cooldown, so it can't be used to quickly drain or transfer experience. And some general experience will be lost when the transfer occurs. So they're not intending to be an incredibly aggressive feature, but something more fun, which occurs when executing players, will be expanding the curses system later on. So this is the initial one that they're doing. So you kill somebody and you get some experience for whatever percentage. So if you kill a bunch of low-level players, you're not going to get very much experience. But if you're able to behead a high-level player, you'll get more experience.
Yeah, the captain of a... you know, of a big tribe or whatever, you know, that would work out well for you. They've added a new feature. They've changed the way the ships, they called it, it's called Ships of the Damned, but it's now the Squads of the Damned. And when you interact with this group now, they've got a picture here. There will be multiple ships and they could be multiple sizes. I believe prior it was only one or two ships.
It was one with a little bit of variation of color.
Yes. Now there's a whole bunch of ships with different size. You can see these are all totally different, and there'll be different strengths and they'll have some different abilities with them. So this is now a much tougher group, as it'll appear in a squad. So you'll have to be prepared for that. They've got some new cosmetics here. They've got a peg leg and a hook hand, which you can see right here.
They look like a real pirate.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of looks like a jet. This kind of looks like a jet turbine. I don't remember, during these
times that they had that intricate of gears. It's like a
multi-set gear system in there. I'm not really sure what's going on with that. But nevertheless, they've got that in there. And
so you can spin it like this.
Yeah, I mean, that's what people, pirates are doing. And then they've got some new armor sets in here. I'll scroll through these real quick so you can see some of this stuff and see what they've got.
Do you think this is tied to the more Eastern look? I mean, they were talking about kind of an Eastern style of the new area. This seems to kind of be more of that Asian style, or you know, whatever areas around there seems to be going for that. It's a totally different visual look. I think they're going to do this to kind of match the new area that they added. Because if you look, this is not Western, as they said, what the original one was.
And then wrapping this up, as we've literally been talking about ARK for like an hour now, but this is such a big update. New feature, player shops in Freeports. Players can now set up automated shops in each Freeport so you can sell your stuff. They've done some balance changes as well, some quality of life changes. It's, some of it's important, but I really would like to get to some opinion on this, Brian, because I think this is big. There's some other things in here as well as how they're changing some of the rule systems and whatnot. And if you want to read all this, I'd recommend that, but we're an hour into the program now, and damn it, Brian, I want to ask you.
Yes.
They're wiping the game. This is equivalent, if this is greater in my estimation, this is a greater update in terms of scale and size than Conan's update that they did before their 1.0 launch. Mr. Yep. Brian Aldridge, the question for you, will you be jumping back into Atlas in mid to late March to jump in on this new update? Is it too little too late with the wipe and these features? Should this have been launch features, or should they have delayed the launch till March when they were ready? Let's go.
I don't think I will because of my schedule. I mean, it comes down to, I'm still not willing to invest. I know the time investment this would take. Now, this is stuff for me that'd be fun to play with on a private server. Mm. I wouldn't be taking advantage of those features, but like, I'd want to check out the under ocean things, do some of those. But still, this should have been stuff that they launched, especially the balance with the tribes and the claims. All of those things should have been how they did it in the first week.
Well,
and then they should have wiped it immediately once they realized it was wrong the first time.
You know, that was my initial impression, was that this should have been done right away.
I mean, this is good.
Here's the thing though, Brian. I think a lot of this was, it is clear to me by reading through these notes, a lot of this is things that they learned over time. These were things that inherently day one, they didn't realize. For example, I don't think they assumed people would be just going around and throwing claim flags in the middle of the ocean and writing obscure messages all over the place. So as you're sailing your ship, every 20 feet, a new message is popping up, which is nonsense, filling up your screen full of text. Things like
I
that.
Don't know the internet well.
Well, it's just thinking on the internet. You just don't. You are building your game to be played how you're building it, and it's very hard.
They probably had some idealized manner that they thought that this was going to be played in.
Well, of course.
They see, oh, okay. Well, here's what people really.
I mean, look at Rust. Rust is a great example of that.
That was supposed to be a zombie game originally.
Yeah. No, Nisco saying they
look
made.
What it turned into.
Nisco saying they freaking made Ark. They should have seen it coming. I agree, Brian. I'm all over this update. I can't wait to play it. We're gonna get on an official server here. We're gonna have a good time with it.
Actually gives us, and plus we can. What I like is the limited amount of time that you have to commit. If people are kind of playing during a general time, they'll be on. You could protect your stuff. It's not this. What do I do when? Because before I felt like, what's the point? Because people could sync your stuff at any time. Like all you had to do is log out for 20 minutes. And someone could sink your ship. I mean, we knew that. It just did. I didn't see the point of really pushing it because it was so easy to just lose all your stuff and there was absolutely nothing you could do about it. Now they're putting those limits in.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's why, I think that's why I'm interested here is, and it's just because you have a 9-hour window doesn't mean somebody's got to be on that in not entire 9 hours. All it does is, let's say you set, I'm just thinking East Coast time. I mean, honestly, God, you could do noon to 9 p.m. I mean, that's a time where maybe, or maybe you make it a little
East
bit later.
Coast. If you said that East Coast, I mean, that would be not that late for me. So when I get on in the afternoon,
all right. So maybe you do 3 to midnight. I mean, maybe that's the time that you do.
I'm saying, like the time that you set, that would be, if I came in and played in the afternoon, that would be during that window easily.
Yeah, well, actually, no. You know what I'm saying? Now that I'm talking about this, 3 to midnight would be 3 to midnight Eastern is a better time because 3 o'clock Eastern time, people may be around, get off work early, get up. Maybe you're a student. You're out of school. Maybe your classes end around 4. Midnight on the West Coast.
It's only 10 o'clock my time.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. So you've got plenty of time to do that. So maybe that's a good time. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. Nevertheless, that's super cool. I like that you can set that. Likewise, or also. Nobody's on, doesn't matter. You can get a notification if your base is getting attacked. And if you are available, which, I think some most people are, we can see it based on our Discord activity that people tend to be more active around, 5, 6, 7 o'clock. Everybody can just stop what they're doing if they're available and hop on the server. That's cool. You can actually know when things are happening. You don't have to be logged in all the time. And thirdly, the war system is a super cool concept to me. And I like the idea of setting a date. I mean, there's this notion and I don't know if it's the world has changed, Brian, since, you know, MMOs like World of Warcraft originally came out. I think they have a lot. I think people have got more things to do now with cell phones being, you know, more prominent and whatnot. People can set a schedule and actually like make things like this happen. Nate, what's the most popular MMO right now? Is it WoW still probably?
It's hard to say. I mean, nevertheless, popular.
It's nowhere near the player amounts that WoW originally had. It doesn't even scratch the surface of the original WoW numbers. Clearly something has changed because people just don't have the time, it appears to me, anymore to invest in a game like they did WoW. You'll have your hardcore group of people, but at one point WoW had so many millions of active players, it was incredible. No games anywhere near that.
Well, you've got a lot more things trying to consume your time right now.
That's the point.
You have so many products saying, you know, we want a bunch of your time. Back then, there weren't nearly as many things that would try to consume your time. Like WoW was it. So you get off work, you play WoW. Now it's, you got a lot of things. You got to watch Netflix and you have just a lot of stuff doing.
I mean, Joe Rogan's pumping out 2.5 hours of podcasts a day. I mean, there's many other daily podcasts that pump out. You look at the network like Twit. I mean, they're pumping out probably 4 or 5 hours worth of new content a day. I mean, there's other things to watch outside of cable TV. There's all of this stuff that is just kind of, as you said, jockeying for people's times. So I think this is a really cool system. I like the war system. I'm in love. I haven't seen it in practice yet. I'm in love with the notes on the set a time for your base to get raided system. Probably not going to, I doubt it's going to alert the other tribes when your time is coming up. It may be you attack it, nothing happens, and you just kind of have to guess maybe what time it's available to do damage or attack. So overall, Brian, I think this is going to be a big update for Atlas, and they actually said, I want to read through this real quick here. With the release of this first milestone, we will be wiping all of the official networks. This is not a decision we've taken lightly. However, we believe, based on a number of reasons, that this will be the best move for our game moving forward. They talk about that the updates are huge, including the world layout, new island types, biomes. What is that below layer before textures are put on things? The mask? Is that what it's called?
The mesh?
The mesh. Once you change the mesh, you have to wipe. You can't...
Are going to be in different places.
Yes, you have to wipe.
They tried to play with this in different ways with Ark when they were messing with the volcano and things. This just isn't the same.
Yeah, they just deleted people's bases is what they did. They're like, if your base is here, you've got 3 weeks until it's gone. No. So take your shit and move it somewhere else because your base is going to disappear.
Yeah, and I think this is a lot better because hopefully they're adding whole new sections. But this will also give you the chance, what might have been the good place to be before might not be the good place anymore. Also, all these claims are being wiped. So maybe you had a place that you wanted to be before, but you couldn't. Now you have that chance. So it's making everybody kind of do that land rush again, which I think will be good, but without so much of the limitations of the biggest tribes taking everything and you having nothing. So
yeah. And they say here, furthermore, we've been a little more soft in some cases when it comes to players taking advantage of game exploits after the first wipe, which they're talking about the one in March, that will no longer be the case. We will still be prioritizing fixing issues, bugs, and exploits. So we encourage you to work together, pretty much saying everybody's going to be on a level playing field and it's necessary to put everybody on a level playing field day one, which is what they're going to do here sometime in mid to late March. Now I will say that they said in here that it was not a decision we've taken lightly, but Brian, we've been covering this. Their player numbers are atrocious, in retrospect to ARCs in a new game. It's not atrocious in the grand scheme of games, survival games. It's actually got good player numbers, but it has dropped dramatically from where it was. This game's only been out since December. So we're going into just three. It hasn't been out 3 months yet. And its player numbers already dipping dramatically. I think we may have been wrong, Brian. I think them doing that wipe 2 or 3 weeks in, we'd still be in the same spot. They have allowed players like us to die off and get a break, a sufficient break, and now may be re-energized and re-hyped to play the game. I'll tell you what, if they had wiped the game 2 weeks in, we would have started playing again, but we would have burned out very quickly.
They may have maintained, kept some of the players, but there's probably ones that had already walked away that still wouldn't come back.
But the burnout, I mean, is if you had played for 2 weeks on broken servers.
Everybody been playing for 2 weeks straight.
Exactly.
At that point.
Play for 2 weeks straight, then they wipe it all. Then you have to restart again. Your burnout is very quick. They have allowed players. I mean, I haven't touched the game since 2018. So they've allowed me now to, and I've just recently moved on from another game. So now I've got plenty of time to play Atlas, and I'm going to. I mean, we're going to get our group going on the official servers when they announce this here. I think we'll have a good time with it. I mean, who knows how long we'll play, but they have done, we've got to give credit where credit is due. They have done damn near everything that we have been bitching about with games in terms of base building and rating and dealing with other players. They have damn near done all of it, at least on text. Implementation will be another thing, but they have outlined what we're going to do to make, this is a survival game. It doesn't include zombies, but it is absolutely unequivocally a survival game. And these are the kind of the survival elements that nobody else has done. Now, Donnie mentioned earlier that there's an Arma mod that's got an app that gives you notifications. Games have done it, but nothing like this, where it's built into the core of the game and every player has got access to it. It's not just a specific mod or a specific group of people. Everybody's got Discord servers. Discord is free. Anybody can make a server. I mean, I'm in 40 Discords and ones with a couple of people. I've got private Discords where I post my own links to keep track of things on different devices and phones and computers. So there's no, you know, you don't have to, like the ARC system, you had to have some sense, some programming knowledge to take their system.
It wasn't seamless.
Yeah. And I don't even, it ended up being useless because, everybody on the server.
Sending notifications to everybody on the server.
It was the server itself sent a note, did one thing. Now you could have created your own database of players and parsed it into that way, but that wasn't built in. That would have required a lot of work and we never did anything with it. But that's Atlas. Huge, huge, massive survival update. And if you're not an Atlas fan,
it'll be interesting to see the player numbers over the weeks after this.
Yeah. And
see if it worked.
If you're not an Atlas fan, I apologize as we've talked about it now for literally an hour. But that's the biggest survival update we've probably had in months for any game. That is equivalent to the Conan update that they did 8 months ago, 9 months ago.
Yep.
Huge.
All right. So let's go ahead and let's try this game giveaway here really quick.
Yeah. What do we got?
We updated the bot. So hopefully this works perfectly. So exclamation point giveaway in chat. And this is going to be a 60 point raffle. So 60 cans. That means if you've been listening for the last hour, you should be good to go. I'm giving away a copy of Fight and Rage. So Fight and Rage. This is a action indie beat 'em up pixel graphics 2D game. It's currently $20, so $19.99 on Steam. And so this is kind of in the style of the old fighter game side, the one that Lance is always
Street
talking about.
Street Fighter?
Yeah, it's similar to that style. It's like kind of a remake
Mortal
of
Kombat?
More of a Street Fighter.
Okay.
So it's kind of that style in the old arcade look. So if you're interested in that, exclamation point giveaway, and then we will we'll roll this before the end of the show.
Alrighty, yes, absolutely. And if you're not joining us live, you should be here. We're live every Tuesday evening, most Tuesday evenings, at 7 p.m. Eastern here on our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/infectionpodcast. Also simulcasted on YouTube. So if you have an issue with Twitch or you need better quality controls, hop on over to YouTube. You can watch over there. Speaking of games that had big updates, Brian, Miscreated had an update here. This is something that you've chatted about in the past, and I think they've talked about in the past, but it's officially here, and that is modding support for Miscreated. This is update 1.02, and this is their first introduction to, and the first iteration of modding support for Miscreated. They say that they want feedback in their Discord channel, which you can find on their website. They've added a channel.
And of course, this is for self-hosted servers.
Correct.
So this is not going to do anything on the public servers.
Yep. If you're in their Discord, they've created a modding channel where you can give them some feedback. Do you want to describe a little bit what this modding is going to do and what some of the features are going to be? You've already mentioned, you mentioned weeks past, that the engine is going to be a little bit limiting on what they can do in terms of modding, but what are they going to try to do here?
So I think the main things that you would see on this, first of all, we've talked about limitations in their storage system and things like that. You know, someone can go in, create a mod, they'll be able to possibly create larger storage, because what they're concerned about is performance. If you have a perfectly capable and strong server and you want to try to up those numbers to where you can store more and more items, the big limitation is CryEngine. You know, it just doesn't deal with some of these things as well. And, you know, maybe their implementation of storage on CryEngine. But what you can do is you could create a mod that will do custom weather effects, you know, run the weather, spawn things in differently. Maybe you want to have it spawn loot differently. You'll be able, I mean, hopefully what you'd be able to do is add additional base building. This is the more questionable things. Adding additional base building items. So make it so you can have different looking bases, extra pieces. This will be interesting, because they don't go into a lot of the limitations, but they do say some forms of mods are not fully supported in the initial release. Can't build an entire level, so you can't create a whole map, pretty much. Workshop collections. I'm not sure if that's what they mean by that. Like, you can't group mods together. I mean, or you just can't make a workshop collection. I don't know. And dependent mods. So there will be some limitations, but I would think that some people could go in and do some of those pretty specific things. If you just want to make it to where zombies spawn differently, loot spawns, maybe specific items spawn, I'm sure you can add new items to it. It'll be interesting to see what people start creating. This is not made on Unreal, so, you know, maybe people that have experience with CryEngine we'll be able to put something out quickly, but this may be a learning curve for some people, because it's not as popular of an engine for the modding community currently. So we'll see.
Yeah, this is big. And they did some other updates in here as well, which we don't have time to get into, but there is kind of a back and forth going on. I'm reading through the comment section here while you're chatting, and there does unfortunately seem to be the same conversation going back and forth, Brian. We need more storage. Then people saying, no, the storage is fine. We don't want it to become like Just Survive, where you can have 5,000 guns. Because there was a storage problem in Just Survive. You literally could store. And we did at points have full rooms full of 8 storage bins just for guns. And every single slot and every single box was full of guns. Bad quality guns, good quality guns, to the point where you wouldn't even pick them up anymore. I mean, so there is kind of that thing, but people keep saying no storage, no money, more storage. We need more storage. You know, please do work base building storage systems. So there is still some of that stuff going on here, but now with the modding support and it going through the Steam Workshop, you know, this is kind of, it may turn into a little bit like Arma, I would assume, Brian, where you'll have these servers running these custom rule sets and kind of doing their own modded game modes and whatnot through Miscreated, which is a good platform. I mean, the game is pretty solid.
Yeah. And I think that that's going to be the better option. Is people really struggled with the base rules of Miscreated. I think that this is going to allow people to create those private servers and make the experience that they want to provide, because the public servers for Miscreated, I mean, to be honest, they just aren't a great experience.
Yeah.
There's so many limitations. People just don't enjoy it. So I think that this is where we'll really see if people really want to play this game. I mean, if mods start getting created, people start creating a server that people actually want to play on, you know, do people want to play this game? Because the world's nice. If the modding was easy, I think you'd see a lot of people jumping on it. But if it's really, really difficult, you know, I don't know that we'll really see this numbers change too much from where they're at now. So we'll see.
Yeah, we definitely will see. There's no there's no doubt about it. All right, so that is Miscreated. I do quickly want to touch on Apex. They had a milestone this week. According to Respawn and EA, as of yesterday, they hit their 50 millionth player. So they've reached their 50 millionth player, which is pretty amazing.
Yep. I mean, now you always complain that how do you verify these numbers, but that this is spreading them across all consoles. I mean, this is Xbox, PS4, and PC. We don't know what the numbers are for PC. I would assume there's a lot of people playing this on console right now.
I would think so. Yeah.
So, but that's still, I mean, regardless, I mean, you can't take away that's huge. This one thing that, Fortnite would always use to pad their numbers is the mobile app. Mm-hmm. There's no mobile app for this. You know, when they started really touting the numbers of people playing, that was after Fortnite released the mobile app, and they probably had a lot of people playing on that.
Here's a couple of numbers they gave out. They said there's been 158 million finishers used, 1.23 billion ultimates activated. This one is funny. 31 billion pings placed. And I'm sure, like me, yeah, whenever I get down, I just ping, 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 ping. I'm sure that pads that number. 170 million respawns and over 16.5 million death box graveyards found. So, you know, I, again, hesitant of the numbers, but in Apex's, to give them credit, they've been very upfront with numbers. They've been constantly bringing us numbers. Now, Fortnite has every once in a while spit out a random number, like 200 million active players, or, you know, whatever this, it's 78 million active players. Some of those other numbers that they've thrown out there, Apex has been constantly giving us numbers. Now, the game is new, yep, so we'll see. I would like to see a weekly thing, though. That's what I'd like to see. I don't know if anybody really cares, but that's the kind of stuff that I'd like to see. Every week.
Yeah, some sort of an actual player count.
Yeah, I mean, give me a player count every week. Every 2 weeks. Just something on a consistent basis, because I hate this, you know, we're only going to give it a player. We're only going to give it a player number when it's like this, 50 million.
When it's good.
Yeah, well, when it's milestone worthy, 50 million players.
Well, and I wonder how many people are playing Fortnite right now.
I couldn't tell you. I don't remember the last time we've heard a number from them.
Yeah. I mean, if the numbers have gone down, they're not going to say anything. Now, if there's a spike in numbers, they'll be like, yeah, this many people are playing.
Yeah.
As if it's what has been doing the whole time. So it'd be interesting. I know, I understand, you know, these closed systems, they don't want to show, but that would be interesting to see.
So, so that is Apex. That's that.
Well, I think we talked a lot about Atlas, but I think we need to talk a little bit about Ark, because yeah, Ark actually did a really big update.
Mm.
Now we were wondering how much they're actually going to do. There's actually a video. I don't know. Let's play that first, because that picture's worth a thousand words, but for our audio listeners, we'll have to explain it afterwards.
You want to talk over to show it?
Go ahead and play it with audio, and then
give me a second here. Sorry.
No problem.
Vastly unprepared, as always. That's me. That's what I do here.
And this was actually announced yesterday, so this should be live in your Steam currently. So if you, because I saw the update hit today, it wasn't in their usual patch notes though.
Gotcha. All right. Ark Homestead, Brian. Out of left field, and which we haven't heard a lot from the Ark folks in a while, and they are seemingly releasing.
This is pretty much a huge Structures Plus update.
I mean, a massive Structures Plus update. They've added, they showed a boat. They showed tree houses, which were probably three times bigger than what were previously. They mentioned double doors, triangular foundations and ceilings. Nisco's asking if the game's going to be 200 gigabytes now. Flexible pipes and electrical cables. Ding, ding, ding. Always the biggest problem is the electrical and piping look like garbage. I mean, there's a whole bunch of pictures here. I can show a couple of them while, or maybe I'll show the video again while we talk. But and why are they doing this? I mean,
probably some of the tech and things that they had. First of all, they probably have a team or some people that are working on Structures Plus specifically that are working on, you know, that have been doing this. But some of the tech that they use in Atlas, as far as you have one item and then you can flip through the different possibility of things that you can place with that one item. So they created the code already for it. All they had to do was implement it. They've added a lot of extra pieces, different angles, and some of it is like being able to pick up an item that you placed. Like they've added that ability to some other items. And then just having like smooth sidewalls, triangle foundations, triangle ceilings. So pretty much the triangle pieces. Large walls, so four times height walls. You don't have to stack so many individual ones, which is nice for repairing. So you're not sitting there repairing really high walls, you know, with a flying animal trying to get up there.
Yeah, we've been there, holding somebody
double from doors,
holding somebody from an animal while they try to repair a wall.
Tech dedicated storage, fence support, so you can build fences that now are level along the top. And now they have Adobe. Metal, stone, tech, and wood. So, I mean, they just really improved that. Now, also, here's the big thing. They reworked the whole kibble system.
Yeah.
So, rather than having specific kibble for certain animals, what they do is now categorize the kibble. So, you have superior kibble, regular kibble, or exceptional kibble, regular kibble, and then simple kibble. Basic, and I assume that's the original because that's a dodo does that. So depending on the type of animal, how difficult it is, you just get the right category. So certain ones will prefer a superior kibble, but I would assume you could put a basic kibble and it would probably just take forever to tame certain things. But I'm assuming if you put a superior kibble in a dodo, it'd probably be an instant tame almost. So they broke it down to those categories. And this makes a lot more sense because, I mean, you were having a whole ton of dodos that you're raising just so you could get that one type of egg.
Yeah.
And then you could make that one specific type of kibble. This kind of, they've got so many different animals now. This makes a lot more sense that you don't have to have 50 different animals to do 50 different types of tames. Also, they fixed a number of exploits. There was one for a water well, Titan downloads, the Velenosaur platform saddles. They fixed those. Also, some crashes that they fixed. And then the rest is just kind of tweaks to different animals and some environment things. So those were pretty much the kibble and the building. I mean, those are some pretty big things. And I think that really speaks to the current active player of Ark. I mean, this is going to be something that they are going to immediately be able to take advantage of and probably appreciate.
Yeah. And they've got a, I mean, they've got a big player base. I mean, there's still 40,000 people playing the game. So,
yep.
I mean, this is,
and Jay Delory, he actually brings up a really good point. It says the 4X walls also cuts down on the entity count for servers.
Oh yeah.
So, I mean, this will be an improvement performance because remember when we would go next to some of these mega bases and then like it instantly lag and then you'd see the walls just kind of starting to show and fill in around where the base is. This will help the draw count. This will reduce the number of draws or calls on the server that happen, and it should improve performance as well in that way.
Yeah. This is a cool update. This is a very cool update for ARK. Part of me wishes I was still active in ARK so that you could take advantage of some of this stuff, because it looks really cool.
It depends where your time's going to go. I mean, it's the thing. There's all these times.
Yeah,
these
games, and it ain't going to ARK.
For time. Atlas,
yeah.
ARK.
Yeah, and it's not going to ARK right now. But obviously, I don't believe they're looking to grab new players. Not that they don't
want to. They're trying to maintain their players.
Exactly. They're trying to give something for their players to do. Which is good. I mean, you want to keep your base happy, and that's kind of what they're looks like they're planning to do here. So this is available today. So go ahead and, as Nisco said,
they didn't give a lot of lead time into this. They pretty much just put it out there and said, "Hey, here you go."
Yeah. So get your extra hard drive out and get your storage space ready to go ahead and install this for ARK. Very cool.
All right, so
I've got something here revolving Dead Matter, Brian. We have received some news from Dead Matter in their 9th community update.
They're announcing another delay. Now,
do you remember when our last delay was?
Well, it was supposed to be out, I think, months ago.
Okay, let me find this.
So let's I'll go through and I want to get your take of if you accept this or not, especially in the current state of games. I'll give you my opinion, but I want to hear your opinion first.
Real quick. November 7th, they were delaying it 8 to 10 weeks. So November 7th, December 7th, January 7th, February 7th, that would have been it should have been out about a month ago. Yeah. Even that, yes. That would have been a little liberal to say a week ago. I mean, it should have been out like in the middle of January.
Yep. So it says we got another update regarding our release schedule. We've taken the last 2 months to analyze the response of our community and our backers. We'd like to thank everyone that has come out to show support for the team. And I think one of this is based on, I think they did send out a poll, because if I remember correctly, actually filled this out
to the
and
backers.
That's what they're saying to the backers, because okay. I back this. And so I think they were asking, would you rather have them take the time to make sure that it's up this level, or do you want to have the game now?
Yeah.
It's pretty much the question. And so they want to thank everybody that answered that. So based on what they've gathered via the comment section, as well as conversations we have with our backers through Discord, an overwhelming majority of our backers have asked us to continue taking the necessary time to ensure Dead Matter has a successful initial release and reception. So we agree with the sentiment that we'll move forward. And at this time, you know, it's going to be, they're going to keep working on it because they have... Now, what do you think of? Do you think now would be a smart time, especially a month ago? What game came out a month ago? Do you think that if they would have released Apex?
Yeah.
Do you think if they would have released that time, that they would have had any chance in the first place?
I think they're very different games. Let me say this.
80 million people. I mean,
I know. Let me say this though, Brian. So if I were to ask you, Brian, let me see if I can phrase this correctly. Brian, I'm going to cut all of your limbs off or kill your entire family. Which one of those would you choose?
My limbs.
Okay. So I'm going to cut all of your limbs off. Is that a good option? Is that a good scenario? Is that a good scenario for you? Are you happy with the result of that? I mean, it's kind of like, it doesn't make any sense.
Because we've seen enough bad games come out.
But the problem is it's a bullshit question to feed your community. No. Hey guys, Brian, how much did you spend on this game? $20, $40?
20-something bucks, $25, I think.
So, Brian, you've spent $20 on your game. Do you want to play a shit quality product that we've been had to delay a couple of times, or do you want to play a good quality product? I mean, what do you think the answer is going to be? I'm not trying to like come at these guys, but it's a bad question. It's a totally set up question. Of course, Brian, you don't want me to chop all your limbs off. That's ridiculous. But to say that, well, that's the better of two options, that's nonsense. It's a loaded question. It's a bad question. You want to play a crappy game that's not done because we have not been able to estimate our development time correctly, or do you want to play a finished product? That's a bullshit question.
Yeah. And personally right now, like we've seen so many bad games come out, but also I think that it's hard to guarantee that when you're a beginning studio like this, it's hard to guarantee that you're going to be a popular game. That you can't guarantee it. And the issue is the games that were a hit, let's say like Rust, those were by chance. You could have a game, let's say like you could have any other game that came out. Let's see, for instance, Scum. Scum comes out. It's just as good looking as Rust. You know, works just as well as far as the character movement. Just didn't happen to take off, right? I think they want to guarantee that it's going to be successful, but you know what? You can't.
Now, that's the problem, is you're setting
Some take off. They're trying to make it so the stars align. You're not going to be able to guarantee that, but I mean, they're just wanting to release, put their best foot forward to say, well, okay, either it's going to take off or it's not, but at least we gave it our best product. And we know that it wasn't us, that was the reason it failed. I think that's what they're trying to do.
I just don't like, so they're saying that we're delaying it. Now they're delaying it to the summer, not spring, summer. It's March 5th. They're delaying this to the summer. We've seen what the summer is. The summer is going to be August or September. And their excuse is, well, the community wants us. No. You've totally failed in your time frame for the development, and you've asked the community, do you want us to release a broken game that you paid for, or do you want us to continue to work on it so you can play a finished product? Doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
It's a bad question. And then they're hiding behind that, like, oh, it's okay because our community says that they want us to delay it. No. The community's only saying that because they don't want to play they've already paid for it. They don't want to play a dumpster fire. They paid good money to get access to a finished product.
I think they're just really scared of failing.
Well, then don't get
into it. I can understand.
Don't develop a video game then. I mean, how many games do you own on Steam?
I don't know, 1,000 something.
How many of them do you play?
3.
Are those other games?
1,266 games.
Are the other games failures? Some of them.
No, I mean,
they are.
If they didn't make enough money to cover their expense of creation in the app.
They are.
I mean, I'm fine right now. There's plenty of free to play games. I'd rather just have a really cool game that comes out that I can appreciate for a little period of time.
I agree. And I don't disagree with that, but I think the root cause of
these guys should have never set a date.
This game was supposed to be out in November. They're going to delay it by almost a year.
See, but remember when I said when they very initially hit funding and they set a date and I said, that's unrealistic. Do you remember me saying that?
I don't
that?
Remember you that, but that sounds like like something you'd say based off this.
It was 1 year. It was 1 year from successful Kickstart that they said they would have a released game.
So what?
And I said, there's no way that they're going to meet that target. That's what I said at that time. There's no way they're going to meet that target. So that was something that when they said that, because I understand some of the work that goes into this. I understand how many details, how many things you have to do. Like, there's so much work. And these guys had made a mod before. They hadn't made a full game. They'd made a mod. But the difference between a mod and a full game is the mod, they've already done all the detailed, annoying work to get you to that point, and then you're just putting some stuff on top of it. So
this successfully funded August 16th of 2017. So you said they said a year. So they delayed.
Originally, they said a year.
So they delayed that to November when it was supposed to be out. Then they delayed it 8 to 10 weeks, which would have put us in the early part of 2019. Now they're delaying it to the August of 2019. So you're talking about a full 12 month delay from original launch. And
2 years would have been the realistic time frame they should have set in the first place.
Yeah, but part of my problem
from scratch. If they already had 50% to 70% of the game created when they kickstarted, then sure, say a year, right? The problem is they, from scratch, they hadn't really done anything yet. They'd only done a few concepts. They didn't have anything, and they said a year from that date, and that's totally unrealistic.
My concern is trust.
Too much networking code and everything else.
There's a trust issue now. This game has fallen into the trap that almost every other early access game has fallen into, is delay, 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 delay. Community says it's okay. Delay, delay, delay. Push, bugs, bugs, bugs. Game doesn't work. Nobody wants to play it. Close up shop. They have unfortunately set themselves up for this. I don't have trust in these developers now.
What they should be doing is like what Josh is doing. They should be doing tests, like open tests, like a weekend test of, hey, we don't have everything done yet, but we want to test this one feature. So we're gonna have it to where our backers, even if it's a raffle of the backers, a certain of the backers can go in and test the mechanics of the house, can test the mechanics of driving, just so that then the backers know, hey, there is something, and they can start see it build, and they'll have a realistic idea of where it's at this point.
Yeah,
because I don't think anyone really knows.
You can't attack Josh for not being transparent with what's going on. Playtests almost every weekend, newsletters, graphs, images.
He streams live and shows development of the game.
Yeah.
These guys are much more closed. They show screenshots, but those are posed. The time of day is set at a certain time. The environment is set. Lighting is set perfectly. Like, that's different. You can get really good screenshots and have a not so nice looking game. I think these guys do have a good looking game, but it's a lot harder to do that when you're, like he does, streams the development all the time. People get to see what the game actually is. That's why I knew he had a good structure to his game, because I watched and streamed him make it. Like, I was watching him actually work in the world and do it. Here, you only have seen the pieces that they want the public to see. And so it's harder to say how far along they really are.
But I'll just tell you this, Brian, even when this game comes out and it's ready to be played, do you have trust in these developers now? You've already backed the game,
it's not really a multiplayer, a big multiplayer game. So I'm not as concerned about it with this specific title, because it's going to be a co-op game,
something like
that. It's not going to be a PvP. Now, I would be very nervous in a PvP game where you had to worry about hackers and all these different things of having a slow turnaround like this, because when hackers are coming and doing all the things that they did to us in H1Z1, and then there's weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks go by that doing, your whole player base then goes away because they're tired of dealing with it, and you don't have anything to show for it. So with this is going to be more of a niche. I don't know how much people are really going to, like our audience, I don't know how much of them are actually going to play this as a group. This is going to be more of a co-op game. It's not going to be the open world PvP type of game.
Don't take this the wrong way, but your opinion, you're already a backer. So you're already out the money. So again, don't take this the wrong way. Your opinion at this point doesn't really matter, because you're already in. You're in for a penny, in for a pound.
My opinion is biased.
But it's biased, right? But it's also irrelevant what you think.
It's what you're saying. Mine is biased because I am going to... If I bought a house, I'm going to say I like this house.
But hold on. Because
you know what I got.
I'm not even saying that. If you either play the game or don't, you're out $25. So at this point in time, your opinion of it is almost irrelevant. It's people like me that have yet to purchase the game. Exactly. It doesn't matter if they win you over. They've already got your cash. It doesn't matter. But for me, the outside player that has seen a company that has delayed their game by 12 months, do I want to give them money to support and fund the development of their game? Do I want to buy a game that has delayed themselves by 12 months? Because, I mean, and don't get me wrong, they clearly didn't know what they were getting into. But is that an excuse? I don't know. I think it's interesting.
I mean, there's a lot of things to learn along the way.
Exactly. And that's my thing.
Proper ways to do it.
And that's the thing is I don't want to dog them because it's not like they've been, I don't think they've been twiddling their thumbs like, oh, herp to derp, we're making a video game. Brian, you and I have talked privately.
I think it was inexperience.
Exactly.
And that's why I said 2 years is realistic. 1 year is not realistic. There's too many things that you're going to run across and aren't going to be quite right. And they're not going to be how you expected. 1 year is the optimal if you've had experience doing it before. And, you know, this is why companies that are development teams for AAA, even just below AAA studios, can do guesstimates on time. You know what? Because they've been doing it for the past 10, 20 years.
Yeah.
And they've done it over and over and over again. These guys have not. And so they're learning all the roadblocks and they don't have people that have been in the industry for that many years on their team to be able to fall back on. These guys have to learn and run into a thing that just doesn't quite work right. And then they have to spend 2 weeks trying to figure out that little thing. Like those things happen. You don't have a team of people. You say, hey, I've got this problem. And you hand it off to them. Say, this is your specialty. You fix it. They have to figure it out all on their own. So 2 years is, if they would have said 2 years from the beginning, I would have said, hey, they're right on schedule. But they shouldn't have said a year in the first place. And I knew that they were not going to hit that. So that's why I'm not so worried about it, because it's not concerning to me, because I'm kind of glad that they're actually falling back onto the realistic goal. That means that they're actually doing it rather than giving up.
Yeah.
If they would have hit the 1 year goal, that meant they give up and just handed you what was in the pile. You know what I'm saying? The fact that they're pushing it back to what it should have been in the first place means that they've been working this whole time and they're meeting a realistic goal if they do release in this summer. So we'll see.
It's just frustrating. God, Brian, I feel like we talk about this crap every week. It's just so frustrating as a consumer. And in a consumer of survival video games, which is already a super limited market, and here is another survival game that we've just got to wait for now. I mean, when did we show the most recent dev blog? 2 weeks ago? It was last week. It was a super in-depth video. A couple weeks ago, I mean, yeah. A very in-depth video. Lots of cool things they're working on, but just I mean, now we're faced with this again. Another delay.
Well, I mean, that's the thing is they should have just not set a date from the beginning and said, but you know what? Rather than setting a date, we'll be ultra transparent. We'll bring you along in the development. We'll let you see everything that we're doing. And you'll be able to judge based on our progress through the product when you think it'll be out. And we'll, you know, before it releases, we'll announce a certain amount of time. But rather than us setting a date, we'll bring you with us and you can experience it for yourself.
So
that would have been the better way.
You didn't fund based on the release day is what you're telling me.
Yeah. Because, well, and I don't remember them saying it before. I think they announced the release date right after. I don't remember if they said it in the Kickstarter presentation, but they said it. I remember seeing that pretty soon after it funded. And I just said it impossible. Not going to happen unless they're really selling themselves short as far as what they're going to release, which many games do. I think that's what most Kickstarter projects do.
Oh, I think most
Kickstarter
you.
Projects receive less funds than they thought they were going to. And so they end up giving you half of a product because they underestimated what it would cost to get the whole thing. And so with this one, they got more than they thought, but the problem is they increased their goal of what they're going to try to create based on what they received. And so now it's taking them longer to do. If they would have met their minimum goal, maybe they would have put out half the product in 1 year.
So you think
what is equivalent of half of what they're actually going to release?
So you think maybe their flex goals kind of screwed them?
I don't know if it screwed them. I mean, personally, I think it's good, but okay. I think that they were worried. I think that it didn't scale well enough to the time frame. They should have said if we met the initial flex goal, like as far as we hit the minimum, then it'll be 1 year. If we reach the max flex goal, which they got close to, it'll be 2 years. You don't want to discourage. You're not going to say that though, because you don't want people to discourage from funding it.
Exactly.
And so you should have just said 2 years from the beginnings. You need to give the goal of what would it take to make the max amount of, if we hit the max flex goal, that's the time we need to give. Now, if we have low funding, we'll release it early and we'll do less. Right.
Yeah.
But you need to give the time frame on the max, because you can't then adjust afterwards, because then you're running into this and people think that you just did it wrong. The thing is, they put a time frame out for the minimum goal, I bet you. They said, we can do that. And the rest of it, they thought it just would happen with the extra funds. That's not how it works. It's not extra funds for more people. That's extra funds for more time, because it takes you more time to do it all. So that's they didn't understand going into it. And I think they understand now.
Yeah, well, experience. I mean,
if anything, they've learned anything from this, and it's made them better developers, and it's made it to where they'd actually be able to do a project like this on time in a more realistic time frame in the future.
I agree. So again, not trying to dog on them, but as a consumer looking at it outside of, you know, the show here,
it just looks bad.
Well, it looks bad, and it's frustrating that a cool game is now. You're not playing this game for 6 months.
Yep. But there's a lot of other games right now, who was it that brought up in chat? Cyberpunk 2077.
My friend Dave
is coming out this summer. There's not a good time anymore to release. I mean, you got to release it and hope that Apex or something else doesn't release on the same week that you're releasing.
Yeah, you got to hope.
I mean, you can't guess it. Yeah. That came with no warning.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, what if they would have released on that first, and that's whatever their last pushback was, they probably would have been screwed. I mean, there's no perfect time. You never know when something crazy is going to come out anymore. Too many good games are coming out on a weekly basis. You just got to put it out there and hope that some form of a community actually plays it.
And because
you're not competing with Fortnite.
By the way, we will take payment to promote your game to have a good community. That we are not above taking money to promote your.
It's like payoffs.
That's not payoff. Be like, hey, you want to promote your game because you need a community because your game released on the same day as Apex? Infection Podcast is your source of paid for show notes and game updates and reviews.
You say if they pay us money that we'll love their product?
No, I'm not saying we'll love it. I'm saying we'll talk about it.
Oh, well.
We will.
People don't want that. If it's a bad game.
I'll say the game exists.
Usually they pay for opinions. They want good opinions. And they'll pay you money.
Is that how IGN makes all their money?
Darn. that's how we've messed up. The problem is we are honest regardless. And they don't like that.
Now, so, Saul is saying, for enough money, you will give a good opinion. He's not wrong.
If the bank account is full, you'll be happy. And then therefore, you'll be really happy with the game.
We're going to all the PAXs this year, guys.
Sponsored by, and then named the game.
Yeah, Remnants. Oh, wait. Never mind. Failed Kickstarter. Raised $1,000.
Ross says, no integrity. It only took 214 episodes, 16 episodes.
Hey, you know what? You know, you got to pay the bills somehow. And you're not paying it by talking about Atlas news. Unpaid Atlas news for an hour.
All right.
We joke.
All right. So one thing I was going to mention.
Yes, sir.
Speaking of dead games.
Oh, Jesus. Yes. Speaking of dead games.
Friday the 13th, the game.
Yeah.
Is coming to the Nintendo Switch this spring. So if you want to play Friday the 13th. Now, people are saying, well, how come all of a sudden this is happening? It's because another development company is pretty much maintaining that game now. Gun Media is the publisher, right? But they're not the developers. And I think that a much more capable team of developers has actually been improving it, and with performance and everything else, it's not that it's going to get new features, but I think it's running better now than it has ever.
So I was actually chatting about this with with our friend Saul last night because we were both very excited about Dead by Daylight. And these aren't the same games, but they come from a similar branch. This game is a far more casual game, in my opinion, than a game by like Dead by Daylight, which for anybody that has never played Dead by Daylight, it requires you to listen to audio cues, very specific audio cues, on screen visual cues that light up in the bottom right hand corner. There's lots of things. The Switch.
It'd be very difficult to do on a Switch.
Well, it's not very difficult to do on a Switch. It's very difficult to do. The Switch has always been advertised and touted as the, you live in a big city like New York, LA, or Seattle, or Chicago, and you take public transit to work or school. You plop down on the subway with your Switch and you play a game.
Yeah.
The games like that are very tough to do in that environment. Friday the 13th, I feel like, is a little more casual, right? I mean, you kind of hear
slower pace.
You hear the noise starting, and you're like, ah, shit, he's here. And then you kind of play the game. But Dead by Daylight is a very, there's a lot of things like audio and cues that require.
Well, with those checks that they do, if you're on a mobile connection in a subway or something like that, and that's lagged at all, like, you're just asking for trouble.
So, yeah, we're not really sure what they're going to do about that, but I mean, the fact that they can't add any new content is obviously a huge issue, but I think I'm saying the game itself, I'm not talking about the quality of the game, but the game itself, I think, actually does fit the Switch's platform in a semi-decent way. Now, Nisco's saying how many 18-plus games are there on the Switch now? I understand the point that he's making, but this is something Nintendo has always struggled with, is getting regular freaking games on their platform. I mean, you look at the Wii, for example. It struggled to get other games on the platform. The Wii U was even worse. Bayonetta was the other way around, but they just struggled to get these games, and now you're seeing games like Fortnite, games like Dead by Daylight, games. These are full-fledged games on the Switch platform, which is a mobile console. That's what it is. That's how most people play.
A lot of it comes down to Unreal Engine games will play on the Switch
with no work or very little
work. So for instance, Friday the 13th was made under Unreal Engine. With minimal work, they're able to transition. I mean, with optimizations and things, they're able to get it to run on that hardware. Rocket League plays very well on it. That was made under Unreal Engine. So a lot of these games that were made under that platform, they turn around and they find, hey, this makes sense. So I think you're just going to continue. I mean, this is very smart. This is one of the best things Nintendo could have done, because, as you're saying, it's very difficult for them to get games on their platform, especially when you have to design the game for Nintendo in the first place. Here, they don't even have to. They can get all these games that have already released on PC. Maybe they're a little bit older of a game, right? You're willing to play a game that maybe is not the newest on that little device because it still feels good. You're not worried about the graphics as much when it's on a little screen in front of your face. It still looks really clear. So I think this Nintendo did a really good job of getting this to run Unreal like that, because I think you're just going to continue seeing these games that, you know, hey, that is kind of fun on a Switch. That does work well. And I think this is a good way. It's not a game that maybe doesn't have a huge audience on PC anymore, I think can have at least people playing it on a Switch.
Yeah, and I think that, and I think you do see Ross pointing out, the Wii was for your sister, so many people ended up buying it. It was like Guitar Hero and games like that. I do think there are a lot of more, I'm going to call them hardcore gamers, people that play games all the time, that own Switches. I know many of them personally.
Yeah.
People that are all into PC gaming that own Switches.
They're not all side scrollers and everything. They're real games.
Yeah, there are, and fortunately, Nintendo has knocked it out of the park. Not Nintendo, but Nintendo and their third parties have knocked it out of the park with some of their IPs. And then now you're adding games like this. I mean, this Tetris 99 game is incredibly popular on the Switch, and now you've got more and more of these PC games, really, that are now transitioning over to... Friday the 13th was a PC, was popular on the PC. I don't think it ever really had made a lot of headway on consoles. Having its way over to the Switch. And I think that's interesting. I mean, I don't know if I'll buy it,
way, because people were buying Nintendo's just for Zelda, for Mario, but they were buying them usually for specific IPs.
That's why I bought mine.
And those Nintendos weren't being used outside of that. Like, there's just no point. And so this is a way that they can still get those IPs to people, to your everyday player, but also they'll use it for other things. So once they beat Mario, or once they beat, you know, whatever the latest Zelda is, it's not just going to sit on the shelf, because that's what the Wii U does. I mean, I beat all the Mario games and played all the specific IPs for the Wii U. There's no other reason to start it up, because I'm not going to buy another game that's not a Nintendo specific game on the Wii U system. It's just not good enough graphics. It doesn't compare to the PS4. So
yeah,
I think that this is the perfect alternative for them, to where people can still play their other games, but it has another use outside of that time.
Yeah, exactly. And I like that. I'm excited to play games like Friday the 13th and Dead by Daylight on the Switch. I think it'll be kind of a cool experience. So,
well, and like Laura's even making, I mean, to speak of, Laura's not a console gamer. You know what? She's been interested in getting a Switch.
Good.
And so
it's a cool platform.
Yeah. It kind of speaks to you that is unique. She doesn't play computer games. She plays very specific console games, but she's willing. She's like, that Switch looks interesting. So it's reaching out kind of like what the original Wii U did.
Yeah.
To a different audience of not your usual console players. I think they've done the same thing with this, to where a person doesn't consider themselves a gamer. Hey, but there's some games I like playing. I'd be interested in getting one of those, when you couldn't get them to get anything else.
Yeah. I actually traveled with my Switch for the first time this week.
How'd it go?
It went good. I played, I didn't have a whole lot of time to play it. I played some Mario Kart, and some Smash, which were the two games that I have loaded on there and play. This was the first time I actually traveled with it out of town since I got it around Christmas, or got it on Black Friday. I was pretty happy with it. I do need to get a portable charger, because the battery dies pretty quickly and I don't bring a charger with me. But, more games like this on it would be cool. Only problem is going to be the internet. That's like on a subway where you're going to tether from your phone. That's kind of a pain in the ass.
Or even on a plane, like they need to have a lot of single player games for this.
Well, they do. They've got, I mean, almost all of the Nintendo, all of the Nintendo games are single player. I mean, all your Marios and your Zeldas and whatnot are all single players. And even Smash you just play against AI and lock characters. This is interesting. We'll see where this stuff goes. This is not the end of it. You will see many, many more games like this ported over to the Switch in the coming months. It's going to be like opening up the tap. A couple of games are going to start trickling down, and then it's going to be a flood of every freaking game that's on the Unreal Engine. Excuse me. It's going to end up with a port on the Switch.
Well, and this is just another selling point for Unreal. You know,
Shill Brian here with a message from
Unreal. I keep bringing it up, but it's just amazing how well that Epic has done in promoting their engine and improving their engine. Why would you go with Unity when you have the possibility of releasing on the equivalent of a console with Unreal without having to make a console specific version? I mean, it's pretty much, you can release on consoles with Unreal, you can release on the Switch, which is a mobile platform, and you can release on PC, you can release on Mac, you can release on Linux. Just a lot of those engines can't compete with that. They're very specific to certain platforms, and Unreal has really spread themselves to be applicable to all of them. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I'm looking forward to more of these games on the Unreal Engine. Is that a paid for segment? Unreal paying.
No,
you.
I wish they would.
Oh man. Imagine
they
could
give you free market assets.
Imagine this. Brian's getting the Unreal deal and has been promoting it on the show and hasn't mentioned a damn word to me about it. Getting all this great Unreal stuff. Scumbag. Yeah,
I wish they were. I wish they were sending me Unreal market assets.
Well, what would that do for me?
Nothing for you. It'd just be good for me.
Oh, okay. I see how it is. I'm going to go and fund my own game to give me money. Whether the storm chasing simulator. Oh, open up. We're going to, what was the name of that game called?
Storm Chaser.
Outbreak. Yeah, I'm gonna get some Outbreak money sent to me, you'll be SOL, Brian.
Uh huh.
All right.
So we didn't cover a lot of stuff.
Oh,
so
now,
let me.
What do you want to cover?
We'll just mention what we didn't cover.
Okay.
Rome Royale had a new update.
Game of the week Fortnite next week, by the way. Next week, Realm Royale.
Next week, okay.
Yep.
Fortnite just started their season 8, so there's some new things with that. Maybe we'll cover it a little bit next week. Anthem, big issues. I'll just say this because we don't really need to go into it. Anthem's having big issues on PS4 to where it's pretty much bricking the PS4 boxes. It's making them actually shut off as if the power is pulled.
Nice.
And they're not always turning back up. So Anthem has been giving refunds for people, a lot of people on PS4 because of these issues. Game that there's a sign up for if you want to be a part of the closed beta, Pandemic Express. I think we did play the video in the last couple of weeks for that, but put a link in the show notes for that.
We'll talk about that next week in more detail. I don't think we've talked about this yet.
Okay. I wasn't sure if we had. ROE has some updates and some new skins. Of course, we're doing Zero for the open alpha. It's going to be March 8th, so this weekend. Rocket League had their 1.59 update. And then Conan Exiles has an update. So those are all things that we did not get to. But if you want to go check out our show notes on infectionpodcast.com, they are all on there.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for that. I do want to, we don't really have a whole lot of time to talk about it, but I do want to show.
I would put it on like 4 or 5X because it's
yeah,
slow. Well,
yeah, because I can't really.
It's like 5 minutes.
Yeah, there's not really a good way to show here. But a YouTube channel by, which is called The Rankings, did a YouTube video where they showed all of the Steam current player charts since 2015. I'll just scroll this on the screen here. You can see what's going on here. There's a link in our show notes, which is infectionpodcast.com, where you can go ahead and watch this. And it's kind of cool to see, even when we think we're in a slow period for games, Brian, this video pretty much throughout the whole thing has got a very similar speed of games moving up and down the list. You see games like Ark that stay on this list almost exclusively. I don't believe Ark, from when they get on the list, leave the list. And then, of course, you've got like games like Counter-Strike and Dota, which are always on there. And it's kind of a cool video to watch. So there's a link in our show notes, which is infectionpodcast.com. And you can see PUBG jumping on the list as we get into 2018. And Dead by Daylight, Paladin, Gmod, and a couple of other games. So really cool video. I don't know how the hell they make a video like this. This has got to be an incredible amount of, what's that, like a 3 gigabyte or a 300 gigabyte Excel spreadsheet with all these numbers?
I mean, they had to just create something that took a screenshot to just every second is iterating. It's going to be XML data or something that's filling in.
Yeah. So that's really cool. Go check that out. It's got like 5.5 million views. So you may have already seen it. Check that out. All right. Well, there's a little segment of the show. It's called Current Players, where we talk about games and who is currently playing them. If I can pull my graphics up. All right. Let's talk about H1Z1, who's got a bump in numbers. Currently playing 1,155. The 24-hour peak is 1,601, and the 7-day peak is 1,694. Moving on over to Ark Survival Evolved. Currently playing 22,606. The 24-hour peak, 37,451, with a 7-day peak of 47,921. Super strong player numbers on Ark. That's why they've been on that list since 2015. Moving on over to Miscreated with their modding support. Currently playing 429 players, the 24-hour peak 716, and the 7-day peak 883. So they still got their group of people playing strong in that game. How about PlayerUnknown's at Battlegrounds? Currently playing 153,922, the 24-hour peak 796,397, with a 7-day peak of 904,021. And finally, Oof Atlas, currently playing 4,444, the 24-hour peak just over 6,000, and the 70 peak 10,479. So this big update and this big relaunch by Atlas is kind of a big deal. And I do want to bring a comment that I saw on Twitter here, and it's an interesting comment, The comment is, the game, in response to the big Atlas update, The game needs to go in a completely different direction. 95% of the population time is spent playing land-based war games. The game has been destroyed by megas and other big clans. The only offline raid. The game was supposed to be a pirate game, and that's far from it. Not an inaccurate statement, Brian. A lot of the time is spent land fighting and land battling. And you know, that's a different and an interesting perspective to bring up about some of that stuff. So, I see as a positive thing, people that are all into the whole ship building and pirate aspect of it are a little ticked off, and I don't blame them.
But I think that people were thinking that you could just be a mobile base and not have to put your roots down anywhere. You could be a true pirate and not have to have a home base. But I think that a lot of these changes are going to improve a lot upon that. And it'll be interesting to see people's opinions here 2 months from now.
Yep.
Are they still willing to play it?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. So let's go and roll into tip of the week here, where either I'll give a general gaming tip or one for a specific game. And a lot of people are playing Apex Legends right now, so that'll be when it's on. So this is tip of the week. All right, so one thing to remember in Apex is that there is no fall damage. So feel free to jump from buildings, off ledges, wherever you can go. Another thing you can do is actually slide down slopes. So if you slide and you happen to be going kind of down a slope, it actually will help you kind of slide down the hill. Another thing that you can do is if you holster your weapon, very much like... there's some other games that we played. You put your weapon away and you actually get a little bit of a speed boost doing that. So make sure if you're running, holster your weapon and get a little bit faster. And if you're trying to get running away from a player, what you can do is actually heal while you're moving. A lot of games kind of limit what you're able to do. One thing Apex has not done is put a lot of limitations on what you can do while moving. So while you're running away, you have the ability to start healing. You can jump, you can slide, you can do all of those different actions and still be able to get away from the other player. And I've been watching Ross actually play this quite a bit, and it's been interesting. Just one thing I think is very good is the ability to get out of a fight. If you look at Fortnite, I think that's a lot of what they're accomplishing with the building system is the ability to survive a fight or to get out of a fight. I think the Apex has done it in a different way, but I think it's a lot of the same type of mechanic of surviving a fight, running away, somehow just getting to where you're not stuck in that situation like you'd have with H1Z1, where it's just you versus them. You're just shooting it out. Like, there's no way out of the fight at that point.
Yeah, you have to engage once you're...
You have to engage, and I think that they've figured out a way without being the building system, without being Fortnite, to disengage from the fight and survive. So that is tip of the week.
Just survive. That's all you can do, right?
Yeah. Except for it didn't. But
oh, jeez. Eight people all playing, right, as I checked the current player count today.
I don't know how they're still
I don't know
in
how
there.
That's possible, but maybe what does that show about Steam Spy and Steam DB?
Might be some bots that never quite exited some random server somewhere.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know how that works. Who knows?
All right, so let's go ahead and we will close this raffle. And we will draw. This is a new system, so draw. Do we want it?
I would re-roll.
Think he wants it?
Probably not.
Man, it's not letting me repick. All right, there we go. Ross, congratulations. So, Ross, you have won a copy. So I will send you a link through your messages. Actually, probably will just send it to you in inside of Discord. So... enjoy. Congratulations.
Yes, sir. All right, Brian. Well, I think that's everything.
I think
so. Yeah, our game of the week is Zira. I unfortunately will not be around. I've got a very busy couple of days coming up with some stuff with work, so I won't be around for that. But I'll be there in spirit, and I'll be around. So I'll ping the Discord and see what's going on, and post some pictures of what I'm working on. So Yeah. Join in for that Friday night. That'll be at 8 o'clock Eastern on our Infection Podcast Discord. You can find the website, find the link on the website's infectionpodcast.com and all the show notes. We literally didn't cover half of our news. So, and if you want to watch some of the videos,
maybe not even a quarter.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, big updates. I mean, you got, you know, that's the kind of stuff that we, thank God we have games like that Atlas that every once in a while, you know, do this massive update and we can spend some time talking about it. So yeah, good stuff.
Very good. Well, hey, if you want to find me at Boise Computer on Twitter, check out my blog, biteoftech.com. And of course, as Nick said, go to our website. On there, we have all the different show notes, all the different topics that maybe we didn't get to today. You can see some videos. You can see links to articles and things like that. Or for something that we did cover, if you want to see more in-depth notes of what we're referring to, those are all on the website. We have a link to our Discord server if you want to join us for Game of the Week. Maybe you want to submit some news to us. We have our Steam group. So if you'd like to get notifications of when we're getting ready to do the live show, it's nice and easy. And of course, we have our YouTube channel, our Twitch channel, and all audio forms. So go to our website for that, infectionpodcast.com.
Yes, sirree. Thank you very much, Brian. Appreciate it. And I mean, I'm really hoping by next week you're not sick. I mean, I hope so.
I'm ready to be over it.
It's getting a little old, I got to tell you, from this end of the thing. It's getting a little old of listening to sick Brian.
Yeah.
Have you tried like what's it like? What do they say? Just like just drinking whiskey? Was that the Irish way of healing?
That'll be my next way to try.
Okay, I'm just giving all the recommendations, Brian. I'm just saying.
What is it, half a bottle? Is that?
I don't know. I'm sure there's a formula that you can that you can find and follow. And
take my body weight and divide it by the.
Yeah, I don't know if it's that complex. But feel better, and we'll chat with you Friday night, and then next Tuesday.
Sounds good.
All righty, ladies and gentlemen, well, thank you for joining us here live again. If you are not here live, you should be. Please join us live. You can do so every Tuesday night right here on our Twitch channel. It's twitch.tv/infectionpodcast. Well, my name is Nick Craig. You can follow me on Twitter personally at Nicholas M. Craig. If you missed any portion of the show or want to check out some of the stuff we missed, you can head on over to our website. It's infectionpodcast.com. Thank you so much for joining us, everybody. Have a great week. See you next time.